Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT.
Welcome to RealiTV, your source for snarky reality TV recaps of all the shows we love and love to hate. From TLC to MTV, A&E to Bravo and more, no show is off limits to the truth as I see it, all from the couch just like you. I'm Jody, your inner voice and best friend who says all the things you're thinking, but you have the manners to never say aloud. Be sure you're subscribed to the show so you never miss a week, and find me everywhere at RealiTV Pod. Support the show and score some amazing perks and merch, as well as some bonus episodes at Patreon.com/RealiTV Pod. Now sit back, it's time to get salty. Hello, hello, welcome back. Hopefully many of you are keeping warm and keeping safe. We are in a deep chill here in probably at least half the country. So I hope you guys are snuggling in with some warm blankets, maybe a glass of wine or tea, whatever your thing is. Hang in there. Soon enough, we will be complaining about the heat and humidity. But for now, we just got to get used to our own free cryotherapy, kind of a Yolanda Foster-esque beauty treatment, if you will. Before we get into Sister Wives, Seeking Sister Wife, and Love After Lockup, let's dip a toe in the shallow end of the news. First up, Andy Cohen's baby shower. He's expecting a baby boy via surrogate, and he had this housewife theme. Well, actually, it was a Star is Born theme, but it was with all the housewives. There was over 50 housewives there, and also John Mayer. I'm not quite sure what that whole thing is about, but it was this whole star-studded, literally star-studded. There was star-shaped flower things hanging everywhere. A little cheesy. I mean, it was beautiful. I just think, I don't know, A Star is Born. It's a little too on the nose. It's not my thing. Now, Andy Cohen, I appreciate him for bringing us the housewives, but am I a huge fan of Watch What Happens Live? Not really. I did like it in the beginning, but I think sometimes he can be a little harsh or things come off misogynistic. I don't think he necessarily means to do it. He's saying things that we all want to ask and we all want to say. I get it. I do the same thing here, but you know, I'm hiding behind the comforts of a microphone. I could never say to someone's face, hey, how are your new boob implants? Because as I've said many times before, I talk behind people's backs because I have something called manners. I have to give him a little credit here though, because as many of you know, I was a surrogate myself for two gay couples. So I took things pretty personally, and I fully understand that. I fully admit that with the whole Jeff Lewis thing. I did not like the comments that he made about his surrogate's nether regions on air. And I think his attempt to make her look as if she was out for money, I don't think it was necessarily the best thing to do, not even for his image, just for his daughter, for a relationship long-term with the woman that helped build a family for him. So that all aside, what I thought was really interesting about this shower, besides the housewives and besides John Mayer, guess who else was there? Jenny Poulos. Now we know Jenny and Jeff had a falling out and Andy and Jeff had a falling out. So you can kind of see where allegiances lie. And I really hope that Jenny gives Andy some advice and how to treat his surrogate, because I can't help but think Jenny felt really bad for Jeff's surrogate. She's had fertility issues herself. So I think she really hopefully would understand the incredible gift that Jeff's surrogate has given him. And it doesn't really seem as if he realizes that gift. All right, moving on from that. Don't want to get too dark and deep there. Oh, great pun to choose, Jody, when we're talking about a woman using her uterus for birthing purposes for other people. Moving right along. Okay, let's talk about the SAG Awards. Lady Gaga singing with Bradley Cooper. Oh my God, so awkward. way too dramatic, the tears, the pleading eyes. I was embarrassed for her. Now let's talk about this Bradley Cooper thing. I was reading the UK Daily Mail and Us Weekly, and they were saying, oh, why didn't Bradley bring his model or his wife girlfriend, Irina, whatever the hell her name is, doesn't matter. Well, I think I know because I read blindgossip.com every single day. It doesn't take a genius to see that Bradley, Irina's not quite his type, meaning she's a beard, they have a contract, and yes, they have a child together, but that's their deal. I've also heard the same thing about Priyana and whatever Jonas that is. Yes, they're married, but if you read quite a few of these little blind items, she wanted to back out of the wedding last minute, but look at the freaking whole ordeal that they had. She couldn't back out. I'm putting maybe like a year or two limit on that. I would say a year tops, maybe two. That's just my take on it. And I'm taking this from sources that I cannot back up in either way. And if I'm an idiot, then you know what? I own it. I'll be an idiot. You know who I did love though? Rami Malek. I find myself extremely attracted to him, not in normal everyday life. I mean, of course, I don't know him in everyday life, but just looking at him, I appreciate him as an actor. But something about him dressed up as Freddie Mercury with the big old teeth, I was having all kinds of feelings that make me very uncomfortable. I don't know what that says about me or my sexuality, but Rami as Freddie Mercury, whew, hot. Okay. I got to talk about this chick that is in the UK Daily Mail. I'm going to post a picture of it because I would never have clicked on it had I not seen this insane headline. Singer Kelsey Carter gets Harry Styles' face tattooed on cheek for his birthday surprise just as her new video is released. Okay, you guys, this chick, as you read this article, she does not even know him, or they cannot confirm that she even knows him, but she keeps saying that she writes songs for Harry Styles and she's a model. I'm going to put that in quotes. She's a cute girl, but think like a Fernanda, 90 Day Fiancé. Yes, she's a beautiful girl, but are we really saying she is going to be some huge model here? I don't know. She got his face tattooed on her cheek. It's not even a great tattoo. The tattoo artist took a picture with her and he's kind of doing that pointing thing that guys do like, hey, I did this, yo. But the look on his face is like, oh God, crop my face out of this kind of thing. So her cheek is all swollen and red. It's a Harry Styles tattoo, but not current day Harry Styles, like the older Harry Styles or the younger Harry Styles with the swoop hair thing. And there's this weird little heart shape next to his face. It's horrible, you guys. What the fuck is wrong with this girl? She thinks this is going to be the thing that convinces Harry to reach out to her and be like, oh my God, let's go to the studio and drop some beats, Kelsey Carter. Kelsey spelled, by the way, K-E-L-S-Y, Carter with a K, both of them with a K because, you know, she obviously wants to be a Kardashian. It's horrible. Look at the photo. Let me know what you think. Okay, next on the agenda, the Briney family. What is the update? Well, if you follow them on social media or you follow their blog, which hopefully you don't, because if you do, we need to have a discussion about whether sites you need to be checking for your news. April, wife number one, left the family a couple months ago. They had the whole season taped and she just picked up one day and said they were going hiking, much like many a Dateline starts, but hopefully she and the kids are still alive. She just picked up and went back to wherever it is that she came from, which is not a bad thing because she was fucking batshit crazy. I have a feeling that she is going to stir up a really nasty child support case. If you remember April, she's fucking nuts. She has a lot of resentment, a lot of hate. The well of her hate runneth deep. It's going to get nasty. It's going to get really ugly, but I think she's going to get her way in this because the Brineys are not going to want April spilling all of their business. They're going to try to keep it quiet, and April knows that. This is based on nothing except my hunch based on many years of watching people on TV fall apart and come to. So that's what I think is going on with April. As far as Drew and the other two remaining wives, I really don't even want to talk about him too much because last season, when I recapped Seeking Sister Wife, Drew and I'm assuming the other wives listened to my podcast. And I know that because Drew would send me messages. I screenshotted all of them at the time, and then I deleted them because the season was over, and really, he just creeps me out. But one of them I was able to find deep in the archives, and this was a response to, I think, an Instagram post just saying, hey, the episode is up, and this is how he responded. Funny show, and mean, but funny, and he put the crying laughing face. BTW, we totally embrace all as friends, no matter their beliefs or walk in life. Live and let live. We want all to be free to live as they choose. Just don't tell us we aren't free to live as we choose. Then we're not friends. And then a smiley face with the tongue sticking out. If I remember correctly, I think he was responding to me wondering if they accept, LGBTQ, if they accept other, I don't even like saying non-traditional relationships because what the fuck is traditional? So I guess I was happy that he's like, hey, as long as you love each other and that's how you want to live, that's fine. I did think it was a little telling that he thought the podcast was mean, which, hey, I can be mean, but funny. And now that April left, you know what parts I think he thought were funny? The parts where I was calling April like the devil reincarnate and all that. I don't think he liked the part where I was ripping on him for wearing socks and sandals and his skin blending in with beige in the sidewalk, but I think he really did enjoy the April part. So for that, I guess we're friends. No, okay, I take it back. And the great words of the little bitchy girl on Forrest Gump in the bus, seats taken. Okay, let's talk about the Fyre Festival documentary on Hulu. I'd watched the one on Netflix, and I really wish I would have watched the Hulu one first. If you haven't watched either of them, watch the Hulu one and then go back and watch the Netflix one. The Hulu one really went into Billy's background. I'm talking about Billy McFarland. Man, his mom and dad, they cannot get away totally innocent with this. When they started talking about, oh, this crayon story, and he was this crayon entrepreneur, he could scuba dive at age 10. Well, first of all, fuck off, because you know what I was doing at age 10? I was at the pool by myself because I was a latchkey kid. I wasn't fucking scuba diving, so go fuck off with your scuba diving. They're talking about how he's ahead of for his age and it's just total snowflake parent building your kid up like they are the best thing on the face of the earth. And yeah, I have two kids. I love them to death. But do they think that they are the most special child to everyone else in this world? No, they know that they're my favorite kids, but they are not everyone's favorite kids. So I think some of that narcissism, the blame for that definitely goes to his parents. I also take issue with the documentary voiceover guy who says that millennials are the group of, I was going to say children, the group of adults that were born between the years 1980 and like 1998 or something like that. No. I was born in 1980 and I can tell you, I don't identify myself as a millennial. And maybe that's something millennials say. I am not a millennial. I think there's a huge difference. If you can remember what the world was like before the internet, if you had to use a card catalog to find a book in your library, you are not a millennial. I just think that's bullshit. We need to move that year up. Maybe like 1988 or some shit, but 1980, no, you're pushing it. Okay, let's talk about this blonde guy, the smart guy, the guy who started Fyre Fraud. I didn't catch his name. It doesn't matter. My co-host Carrie on Moms on the Rocks brought this up, and I think I didn't want to admit it to myself, but when she said it, I was like, oh my God, I think you're right. I think my heart was feeling the same way. By the end of the Hulu documentary, I'm telling you, you're going to have a crush on this guy. He's not my type at all. He's a, I don't know, rich New York hedge fund manager kind of looking kid. He's probably like 29 or something like that. But by the end of it, I was digging him. He said, I have a thesis. This is wrong. I mean, who says that stuff? That's smart guy stuff. I have a thesis. This is wrong. Most of us just say, I have a hunch or this guy's shitting me. I mean, if you're using thesis in everyday language, I guess that's why you're probably making multi-millions of dollars a year. Two more things that stood out to me in the Hulu documentary. Billy McFarland has massive feet. He looked like my daughter's My Little Pony Equestria Girls action figure dolls. Just these massive boots. He looked fucking ridiculous. And I don't buy this, oh, poor me. Well, first of all, I don't even think he ever said, I feel bad. He did this overwhelmed, blank look, these big blinky eyes. I don't fall for that bullshit. I think he is a sociopath. I think his lawyers just told him, you know, come across as very diplomatic. Don't get too emotional. I don't believe for a second that he just accidentally found himself in this shit. Bullshit. I was really surprised to see that there was a Dairy Queen, though, in the Bahamas. That, out of anything in all the documentaries, blew me away. Way to go, DQ. I'd freaking love a blizzard. I'm in a blizzard right now, and I could go for a blizzard. The Hawaiian ones are unbelievable. If you like coconut, they have coconut, pineapple, and banana blended together. I know, what's the point of eating ice cream if you're going to have some healthy shit in there? Just throw some Reese's instead. But I'm telling you, if you want a little refreshing treat that's going to be 2,000 calories, get yourself a Hawaiian blizzard. All right, also caught up, and by caught up, I mean I only lasted until the first commercial break, Lohan Beach Club. How the fuck is this still on TV? It's not even like, oh, let's say Jersey Shore where, well, no, that's not even a good comparison because I fucking love a Jersey Shore. It's not even like a bad season of The Real World where it's so bad, but you gotta watch it because it's bad and you're already in it this deep. It's just bad, bad. She's on the island. Maybe it's on an island, wherever. She's in Mykonos. I know that's Greece adjacent, something. Oh, God. You guys, I have a master's degree in teaching. Did you know that? At least I wasn't teaching geography. Take comfort in knowing that. So Lindsay's over there. She's with some investor friend of hers who he wants to be famous. He wants the Kardashian lifestyle, too. And the two of them, I don't know if they're trying to do like a Vanderpump Rules kind of thing. It's so unclear. They're hiring these young people, and these young people are coming in there. One of them said he's really excited to be there because there's potential for a long-term career. Have you seen any long-term career of Lindsay Lohan? Like, what are you going on here? Where are you basing this observation that there's potential? So they have this staff meeting that Lindsay is leading, and she's having them do some sort of inspirational, what are your insecurities? What are your goals? Some bullshit. Her whole thing that she shares with the staff is that they need to soak in all of the opportunity and above all else, treasure yourself before anything. That is the life lesson that Lindsay has learned after going through all she's been through, yacht to yacht, movie set to movie set. Soak in opportunity and treasure yourself. Okay, well, that's nice. I can't tell you anymore because I had to turn it off. It is absolutely terrible. But I tell you what I did watch, every goddamn second of it, Love After Lockup. Let's get into it. WeTV has heard our prayers, heard our pleas, and they've ordered 10 more episodes for this season. Thank God. And most of all, I am excited because I want to know way more about Clint and Tracy's background. They've been posting some shit on social media, and I'm just going to say they don't look well. They have lost weight at a pace that I am extremely envious of, but it's not a good look on either of them, especially Tracy. She is very gaunt. Clint's coloring is always off. He's got some jaundice issues or vitamin D deficiency. We've talked about this. The two of them cannot be doing well. So I really want to know way more about their background. Hopefully we get into it. We're going to get to them in just a second, but let's talk about Matt and Caitlin first. If you remember where we left off last week, it was where Matt came up with this hilarious joke to tease Caitlin that they were going to eat their meal and then dash out of there, known as a dine and dash without paying the bill. Oh my God, it was hilarious, right? I'm sure you're still laughing. Okay, well, after the dinner, you know, that Mother Matt paid for with the zero tips and likely no rent that these two assholes are giving her for doing all their laundry and all that kind of shit. They're gonna take it easy for tonight. They're gonna go off and have some fun separate from one another. Matt's gonna go meet up with some old friends and not do meth. And Caitlin's gonna go hang out with Matt's mom. Oh, lucky lady, right? I'm sure she's just dying for Caitlin to come back home so they can talk more and more and more about Matt being a total fuck up. I also find this to be a little strange, to be honest, just besides the fact that Caitlin is mooching off of Matt's mom even more than Matt is, in my opinion, because Caitlin's not her kid. I think it's weird that Caitlin is all about Matt being independent. He needs to be strong. He needs to get a job. He needs to have goals. Well, what about you, Caitlin? Why don't you pay for your own Uber and go meet up with your friends? I mean, Matt's mom is certainly not begging to hang out with the house guest whose crusty underwear that she's been folding for the past couple weeks. You know, go call up your friends, go do your thing, leave Mother Matt in peace. But no. Something tells me that Caitlin is that girl. We saw she had at least one friend, but she's that girl who really needs and loves her girlfriends and, oh, you're best friends for life, gals before boy pals. I was going to say bros before hoes, but you know what I'm saying. But she's also the kind of girl that as soon as they have a boyfriend or a girlfriend, boom, poof, they disappear and they only come knocking when they need someone to cry to or they're breaking up and what am I going to do? And then all of a sudden, next thing you know, they're wanting to split mozzarella sticks with you. And fuck that, because I have a whole story about it. I have two friends. Their friendship was broken up over mozzarella sticks. I'll tell the story sometime. Just know Caitlin is that girl. I got my eyes on her. Now, Matt might be the same kind of jerk because he rolls in to meet up with his buddies that he's grown up with, and the one that I'm calling Buzz McAllister describes Matt as a, quote, marvelous kid who was good at everything he did. Okay, let's take it easy there, first of all. I mean, before we pull into Exaggeration Station, let's note that Matt was also marvelous at things like methamphetamines and, oh, you know, Grand Theft Auto here and there. So let's not, you know, there's no honor roll for that. But to be fair, Buzz started backing that ass up after Matt was acting like shocked that Buzz would ask if he had a job or why doesn't he want to be employed? Ew, disgusting. Matt was honestly, and I truly believe this was not for the cameras, and it wasn't as if production was like, oh, say that you're not interested in getting a job. Matt was honestly shocked why someone would ask him if he had a job. Like, why would you want to work? He says that he enjoys the prison lifestyle, which, hello, red flag, not only for boyfriend, girlfriend, but for friends. If you're hanging out with someone and they're like, oh my God, you got to check out the fucking clink. It is unbelievable. Don't be friends with that person. The guy has zero goals beyond staying alive for the next 30 seconds. If he wanted a job, he could easily get one. His dad owns an HVAC company that's a well-established company. I think he said he had it for over 30 years. But HVAC is just, it's not Matt's thing. He doesn't like it. It doesn't spark joy. Maybe that's what it is. It's not that he doesn't want to work. He's the newest brand ambassador for the KonMari method. Matt Mari. That kind of rolls off the tongue. What Matt Mari doesn't like, but what does spark his joy? Lots and lots of drinks on someone else's debit card. Cheers to freeness! Freeness. Not freedom, freeness. You know, somewhere in, I think they're in Washington, right? Somewhere in the great state of Washington, there's an entire school district that's just denying claims to have graduated any of these three fine young gentlemen. So they're just tearing it up at the bar. And the next morning, Caitlin walks into the kitchen. She is just giggling over this crazy Chinese food mess that Matt left on the kitchen table. You know, fuck that, Caitlin. It's screw your fucking giggles. Get over there and clean that shit up. Mother Matt was already having a day. And you know, seeing Caitlin walk in there laughing like, oh my God, that crazy Matt. Am I right? Whatever her name is, Karen, Kathy. No, you know that if Mother Matt didn't specifically say, I'm not going to clean that up, one of you needs to do it, Caitlin wouldn't have done it. She's lazy and she has no goals, just like Matt. I mean, look at their living situation, right? The mom was saying, when are you going to leave and stop sponging off my breakfast sausage and sitting on my stools like your fucking Carol Radziwill? But Caitlin doesn't get it. She's just as dense and blind to reality as Matt. I don't feel bad for her. I mean, you and I, we all pick up on the fact that Mother Matt does not like Caitlin, right? But I don't think Caitlin knows that. Caitlin thinks they're besties. Like, they're in this together. How are we going to get Matt back on the wagon or off the wagon? No, on the wagon. What are we going to do about this Chinese food? Am I right, Mom? And Mother Matt's like, how about you get the fuck out of my house and bring your Walmart undies with you? Don't like Caitlin. I am not a fan. Again, don't feel bad for her at all. Let's get into some Meghan, Michael, and Sarah drama. This week, you know who I was thinking of the whole time? Father Donnie, my Don Don. That had to be hard to watch. Hopefully, Meghan just told him, hey, Dad, Pops, Father Don Don, don't watch this. You're not going to want to hear your daughter talking about getting some. She's really living the dream there. I mean, Michael has gotten her a really nice hotel room, and I was a little jealous. She's getting ready in peace. I remember those days when you didn't have a care in the world. You didn't have kids screaming and yelling, probably the same shit that Sarah is sick and tired of, which is why she wants Michael there to lend a helping hand. But no, he's on his way to deflower Meghan. I gotta tell you something about Meghan. I really am jealous of. I think I might have said this before. I'm always jealous of people's confidence and their lack of awareness how things are coming off. I was also very impressed with Meghan's confidence in the airline industry because she had full-size bottles of her products, not little travel-size bottles or maybe you go to the dollar store and fill up some cheapy little bottles. I know I don't trust Delta enough to hand over the only things in my life that helped make me look human before I would see the potential love of my life for the first time in the free world. But Meghan, man, she's just going all in. Don't take her advice, though, because if you watch the most recent episode of Real Housewives of Atlanta, you'll see that Marlo made that same mistake, and oh, it did not work out well for her. But let's get back to Meghan putting on her eyeliner. I had some major concerns. I still do. Maybe I'm not doing my cat eye correctly, but I thought that everyone, you know, you kind of hold your eye taut. I'm doing it right now. Like you pull your eyelid a little or kind of open up your eyelid space so you get a nice smooth line, especially with a liquid liner. But Meghan was just going like freehand all over her loose skin. Either she knows something I don't, or she has a wonky liner line that would drive me friggin' nuts if I was talking to her. Not that Michael and Meghan are going to be doing too much talking, because Michael arrives with roses and hearts in his eyes. And meanwhile, Sarah is somewhere else in New York, and she's eating dinner with CrossFit friend, who seems way more annoyed with Sarah than Michael, who is the one who went missing. I think I might have said this before, or maybe I was just thinking it. It sucks being that friend like CrossFit is, who is supportive, who's there for your girl, and then all of a sudden they get that guy back. Okay, think Caitlin. We were just talking about that. They get back with the guy, they go all stupid again, and you're like, what the fuck? I don't have the energy to be putting up with your drama anymore. If you're gonna be dumb, then I'm done. I'm out of here. I think Sarah really is stupid because I wouldn't mess with CrossFit. I mean, I certainly wouldn't want to be on her bad side. You know, she'd probably get in the mood to work out and next thing you know, she's trying to do a burpee off your face or some shit. Now, let's stay with Sarah for just a moment because she drops this very, I'm not even going to say subtle because she wanted it to come across as if she was being subtle, but she definitely wanted to make the point where, oh, I know it's only been 2 weeks, but it's possible I could be pregnant. And WeTV does not put little subtitles on the it's possible I could. They just put subtitles with I'm pregnant. So it really took me a good 2 or 3 times watching this over and over to catch, did she say she is pregnant or that it's a possibility? Again, Sarah is that freaking dramatic chick that loves the rumors and the drama. But, you know, she says she's fine. She knows she and Michael are gonna be fine. They're married. They're gonna be together forever. Okay, Sarah, tell that to Michael, who is, for the first time we've seen him, genuinely smiling ear to ear because he's with Meghan. And Meghan is smiling too because although there is an entire camera crew zooming in on her hair follicles on her thighs, she cannot wait for Michael to... I can't bring myself to say it. You can go and find the little memes for it. He said he's going to make her explode, and I'm just going to leave it right there. I can't even repeat it. Jesus Christ. Okay, let's go on to Tracy and Clint. Clint has the same non-tear producing cry as Amber Portwood from Teen Mom. And not a lot of things anger me as much as a fake cry where they're trying to very slowly talk and breathe like this and no tears are coming out. Okay, whatever, you cry baby. You married someone who you knew was addicted to crack. You gave her your credit card, access to your rental car, and your phone. What did you think was going to happen? He's left alone to clean up the hotel room, which I was very concerned about and thinking, oh God, I hope he leaves a tip or something for the people cleaning up this room because God only knows what they had to suffer in changing those sheets. I noticed when Clint was bending over to shove the wedding dress into his suitcase that he had glitter all over his face. You know what that means? That means that Clint has not showered in at least 2 days, which is disgusting since he was also having sex with a woman who also hadn't showered in at least 2 days, whose latest shower was in a federal prison. That is fucking nasty. And you know what else is fucking nasty? The way Clint is shoving all his shit under his seat on the airplane. Take a second here. Imagine the camera guy who had to board the plane with Clint, knowing that he's got to get this slob of a man back home, and he's also got a job to do. Tape anything that Clint is doing because this guy is going to make TV magic. And he looks over and he sees fucking Clint, man. He is sitting there curled up kind of in a fetal position, and there are just plastic bags of shit shoved under his seat. I don't know how he's getting away with this with, you know, whatever airline rules and regulations. It doesn't matter. I'm sure the flight attendant was like, oh my God, I'm just staying away from this guy because he fucking stinks. But I just feel like, you know, karma has got to come around for the assholes that are like Clint, who are just pack rats and disgusting animals on airplanes. There is a Twitter page and an Instagram page I follow him because it's cringy, but it's also hilarious. It's at Passenger Shaming. They post pictures of people doing the most disgusting and hilarious things in airports and on airplanes. Those things that you see and you're like, oh my God, am I the only one seeing this right now? I need to share this with someone. Well, that is what this place is. Go and check it out. It's at Passenger Shaming. So guess what I did? I posted a picture of Clint and tagged at Passenger Shaming on it. So if you want to go see it, go to Passenger Shaming. I don't think they've posted it, but if you look at my Instagram or Twitter, you can get a nice little snapshot of Clint's assholery. Okay, who's up next? Oh, let's do some Lizzie and Scott. We had a week without them. It really felt like a life sentence, but bum-ching. Okay, that was the only joke that I wrote, and it was pretty damn bad, I have to admit. But they are back. They are brighter than ever, and I'm talking about Lizzie. She's wearing this bright fuchsia t-shirt, and I don't know how I didn't notice before, but this hotel room that they are in, this accent wall is painted the ugliest shade of bright fucking blue. So the bright shirt, the bright wall just emphasized the manic crazy that is Lizzie. She still has this fucking suitcase filled with $2 flip-flops from Old Navy, which I'm not going to diss because I have several pairs myself. Don't mean to brag. But she's also got these busted Payless wedges that look like maybe they got them at Salvation Army or something. I just don't understand why she needs so many shoes. She's only been out of that hotel Home Depot oops paint one time to go to dinner, so why do you need so many fucking shoes? Well, you know I have a theory because I've been cursed with a brain that immediately goes Dateline and prison documentaries. So I started wondering, why would she need so many shoes? And perhaps it's because she needs places to hide her meth stash or whatever currency that she is currently specializing in. Think about this. Lizzie has managed to launder $90,000 in and out of multiple prisons in less than 3 years. So I guarantee she is cooking something up for sure. And I'm not even using that as a pun, like cooking up meth. She's doing something with those shoes. She's hiding something in there, whether it's hiding something from production or her daughter, something's up. Now, Scott, he's up to something too. That little rascal, that romantic rapscallion that he is, he's planning this romantic day at the farm with Lizzie. His plan is to propose to her. So after they bang on the fence to make the horses come over and Lizzie tries to teach Scott how to skip, let's press pause here for a second. I know for a fact that skipping is in most kindergarten PE curriculums, so I'm pretty sure Scott knows how to skip. He just doesn't because, you know, he's an adult. I think Lizzie thinks it's cute to skip around because she's in arrested development. She was locked up or started becoming involved in the, judicial system. That's making it sound much more hoity-toity than it is. She started becoming involved in the incarceration prison system around the time that Newlyweds was on TV. I think she thinks Jessica Simpson is still married to Nick Lachey and it's hot for girls to act stupid and, you know, ask tuna chicken and if chicken wings are made from buffalo. Please no one tell her that Jessica Simpson is currently pregnant with someone else's baby because that might just give her some more ideas. Now, to be honest, I don't even think Scott really likes Lizzie anymore. I think he gets annoyed with her. I don't think he trusts her at all. But he knows that he is too far in it at this point to admit that he was wrong about her and walk away from a failed investment. So instead, he's going to do what most idiots who have already put too much money into a restaurant that's failing, a failed investment, he's just going to double down and he's going to propose instead. So he gets down on one knee and says,
Lizzie, I know I haven't known you for a long time. Will you marry me?
To which Lizzie responds, get up, Scott. This is scary. I mean, I don't know if I want to do this. I mean, I guess. You're supposed to put it on my finger. Jeez. Oh, Lizzie sure knows how to make a man feel loved, doesn't she? I guess that's actually what baffles me about women like Lizzie and batshit crazy ones. Think Danielle Staub, too. They're in the same kind of category of crazy. She's had 14 men propose to her in her lifetime. I don't get it at all. I know the quality of the men is probably on like the Clint scale, but still, 14 other men have proposed to her. It blows my fucking mind. I really don't know who I'm rooting for between the two of them because they're both assholes. I hate both of them. But part of me does kind of hope that Scott pulled a dirty John and it's a fake diamond in there. They both deserve it at that point. Okay, Brittany and Marcelino. This was gut-wrenching. Every week I like Brittany more and more and I feel more and more badly for her. So Brittany's on her way to see her son Giovanni, who she has not seen in 2 years. Or I take that back. She saw him the first year through Windows or on video or something like that, but she has not seen him. He has not seen her in at least a year. Not only does Brittany have the stress and the guilt that she's got to deal with, but she's got fucking Marcelino, who is kicking back in the passenger seat. He's basically in the back seat, and he says he's isn't going to deal with disrespect from her ex, Tito. Right, Marcelino, because it's all about you today. It's not about Brittany or her little boy. It's about you. No, just shut up, bite your tongue. If you are this disciplined, you should be able to keep your mouth quiet. And even if you feel disrespected, zen yourself out, use whatever military training you have to get in your zone. Just shut up. I'm 100% sure that Brittany and Giovanni have bigger feelings than just disrespect that they are dealing with right now. And even Brittany's ex, Tito, who we haven't even met yet, not knowing anything about him, you gotta know that there's a whole dynamic of 2 years of things that have happened before Marcelino's stupid, slow-talking, self-important ass started standing outside the prison in his frickin' Nissan Cube. I almost wish that Marcelino did not even go. I think it would have been very healthy for Brittany to go without Marcelino. Don't introduce this new guy to your son right off the bat if you yourself are not even sure where things are going. But I get it. It's a show. Maybe she needed him there for support or for the car. Let's just put that aside. Now, I'm curious what you were all thinking about Tito at this point, because we hadn't even seen him yet. We heard his voice on the phone, and it was very deep and gravelly. I was thinking that he was going to be kind of Marcelino-esque with the machismo or the controlling nature, but I thought he was going to look a little bit more like Clint or have some Clint-ish look to him. So imagine my surprise when this ripped guy wearing a Hawaiian lei opens the door at a nice house, too. He was super friendly. He had a really cute girlfriend and wife. They seemed pretty damn nice to be throwing a Hawaiian-themed welcome party for Brittany. They seemed like incredible people. And that little boy, her son, I'm actually getting choked up even thinking about it. I'm putting myself in her shoes. That was just gut-wrenching, the way he was waving and running at her and jumped in her arms. He obviously loves his mom, and Tito must be doing something right because that little boy was so sweet and smart and respectful. And for a three-year-old to be expressing what he was expressing, that's pretty incredible. I think he does get that from Brittany, because Brittany's kind of like that too, where she's very smart about her emotions and what she says. She's not just saying words to say them like Marcelino. She's very purposeful in what she says and how she expresses it. And if you noticed, Marcelino changed his tune pretty damn quickly. I think as soon as he saw that if he were to compare himself to Tito, he was actually the loser in the situation. Tito was the alpha for sure between the four of them. Marcelino thought he was going to be, you know, the bigger and tougher new boyfriend, but instead, you know, he's just the boyfriend that drinks half of Brittany's Frappuccino before he lets her have a sip. So let's just fast forward through Giovanni crying for Brittany, wanting her to stay and wanting to go with her, because that's just some sad shit. And like I said, I'm hormonal and it's cold outside. And yeah, as if cold outside, that's what makes me cry. But I'm just going to use that as an excuse. It was some sad shit. That's all we need to know. So let's fast forward to some fun stuff. Wedding dress shopping with Brittany, Amanda, and whatever that other cute friend is. This might very well be, I know this is going to be a big statement here, but I am feeling it to be the truth. This might be the best store employees ever on a reality show, because they were just the right amount of, I don't give a fuck. And also, yes, I love your kind of crazy. I can get down with this. Get your ass in that wedding gown with your prison girlfriend. Come on, girl. They get the reality TV stamp of approval. Now, in terms of dresses, if we're just going for style advice here, I didn't really like the first dress that Brittany put on. I think the dress was pretty. It just didn't do her any favors. Brittany's kind of like me. She's got hourglass figure. She's got boobs. She's kind of got arms like mine. And you're just going to look larger, because if nothing is fitted, you just see a big bottom and then maybe not your best features on top. All you saw was arms. I thought she could have done better. The second dress, the one that Amanda picked out, her ex-girlfriend, I don't know, it was okay. I actually liked the one that Amanda put on with the urging of my new besties at Beau's Bridal. I think those ladies would be a hoot over some champagne in the back room. The stories they could tell. Call me up, ladies. Find my link. I will fly out to Vegas in a hot second. Because let's just pause right here. Do you even see what we have? They are in Vegas. We've got Sister Wives. We've got 90 Day Fiancé. We've got Love After Lockup. It is truly a paradise of trash potential. I am all for it. Again, I really appreciate what these women did, putting Amanda in that wedding dress and making incredible TV, but they were very sincere about it too. So I was digging it. Okay, we're going to take a quick break and I'll be right back with Seeking Sister Wife. I am psyched to tell you guys about my sponsor this week, Drops. I've been hearing ads for them on other podcasts, so I was pretty excited to try their laundry pods and wool dryer balls out. We tried laundry pods before, but the color swirls dyed a bunch of Dave's shirts. You can imagine how ticked off he was. Awesome blue splotches all over four brand new shirts. Drops are different though because they know that color doesn't mean clean. Their formulas offer a plant-based, chlorine-free, biodegradable way to take care of your home and your clothes. I use the Sensitive Skin fragrance-free pods for my kids' loads because they both have eczema year-round. It's so hard to keep up on it, and I was shocked how clean and soft everything came out. I'm going to try the Sensitive Skin with lemon and eucalyptus oils for them next time because the lavender eucalyptus ones that I used on Dave's clothes and mine smelled so good. Oh, and the dryer balls. They are 100% New Zealand wool. It cuts down on static, dry time, and they're reusable, and I added a few drops of peppermint oil on them and made my towels smell amazing. And not only do they have laundry pods, they have dishwasher pods too. Tons of products from kitchen to baby to your gym bag. They are honestly awesome. When you order Drops, you save 20% with automatic wash plans right off the bat because you're cutting out the middleman. Plus, there's no membership fee or extra gotchas. You can skip, delay, modify your order at any time and free shipping. All your Drops products are delivered in the most sustainable way. No plastic in the compostable box. Doubles as the shipping container. It's really cool, and it's even cooler because Drops products are manufactured right here in our own backyard in the US of A. Drops believes in supporting local jobs, communities, small businesses, and fair wages. Right freaking on, Drops. And now that I'm a pet owner, the fact that they are cruelty-free and never tested on animals is amazing. Drops believes in kindness, not in taking harmful shortcuts. Here's what you need to do. Visit drops.com/realityb. That's drops, drops.com/realityb, R-E-A-L-I-T-V, and enter realityb to get an extra 30% off your first order of convenient, plastic-free, eco-friendly cleaning. Every Drops counts. The name of this second episode of Seeking Sister Wife is Failure to Launch, and I think it applies more than just to the Winders, who, oh wow, what an awkward episode. I think it also applies to Dimitri and Ashley. These two weirdo opportunists. If you get a chance, go and look at their websites. They've trademarked either their names or their professions, all of them made up. They're very phony. They're very, we want to be cool and different, so we're going to do everything different in our lives. Dimitri has made up and trademarked some sort of profession that he calls an ontological architect. It means something about, I give you creative ideas, how to frame your ideas in order to be creative. It's just a lot of words, a lot of bullshit, and I think it's going to be yet another business that fails to launch. Because if I remember correctly, Dimitri had some sort of business that scammed school districts out of money or textbooks or laptops. I know, very specific. You can go look it up. I don't even want to give this guy any more time than I have to in these recaps because he is loving the attention and he certainly replies to your comments and things on social media. So if you feel like knocking yourself out, go for it. Now these two and their fucking wicker table, we gotta talk. That dining room table that they sat down at is so impractical, and it offended me more than Dimitri staring at Vanessa with the creepiest damn come-hither eyes I have ever seen. Who buys a table that has thick, rough, woven braids all over it, and you don't use a glass top on top? I mean, not only would you have marks on your arms, you know, like by your elbows, if you put them on the table, God forbid you put your arms down for more than 3 seconds, but there would be crumbs and food and shit being stuck into those nooks and crannies. And just imagine the dust in between everything over the years. Yeah, just burn it all down. I'm sure Dimitri could wax all poetic about it. I'll check his website for details later. Now let's jump to poke for life, pokey, whatever the hell it is. I know it's some sort of Hawaiian dish. I did some Googling. Apparently it's rice, fish and or chicken and vegetables, which to me just sounds like Chipotle, but hey, I'm not an ontological architect, so what do I know? Vanessa's taking Ashley there because they need to have some bonding time. They got to lay some basic ground rules out about how they're going to live together as a polygamist family. It starts out innocent enough where Vanessa is saying that she thinks her kids are really cute. Then Ashley goes on to continue to blame Jocelyn for Dimitri hopping into a cab, showing up at Jocelyn's hotel to sleep with her without his wife knowing. But again, it's all Jocelyn's fault. And then the hammer comes down. The Snowdens have a very particular diet because of course they do, because they're oh so special and unique. Well, turns out Vanessa isn't totally down for eliminating meat and dairy from her diet, and I don't blame the girl. To give up a filet and ice cream in exchange for Dimitri, I don't even see why there's a need to deliberate about it at all. Use that as your excuse to get the fuck out of there and meet me at Five Guys. We'll probably meet Five Guys there because this girl is fucking gorgeous. We'll get a burger, we'll get a shake, and meet someone who is not a total douchebag. Let's talk about Ashley for just a second. You know, she's trying to make it seem like she's all cool with sharing her husband with another wife. They believe in the lifestyle. But I do not believe for a second that she actually is or does believe in the lifestyle. While the other families we've seen, they have more of a religious reason for having a plural family, and the wives seem to be, for the most part, on equal footing with their husbands, I think Ashley is setting any future wife up to be her subordinate. She seems very obvious about it. She is allowing Vanessa to go with Dimitri. It's the way she's wording things or framing things. She's giving her blessing, and therefore Vanessa must be thankful or grateful for her. No matter who comes in, hopefully it's not Vanessa because so far I like her, they're automatically going to be number two. Ashley's always going to be the alpha. And as we've seen with the Briney family, if the alpha, like April, wants to stay the alpha, it's never going to work. I think it's pretty plain to see anyone watching this that Ashley's cover story is being supportive. It's not being supportive. She's following them around as they're getting ready, keeping tabs on them, making sure that they know that she is in control. She is the one allowing this to happen. She is not as laid back and flexible as she would like us to believe. Now let's talk about Bernie and Paige McGee. Confession time. I love this family. I love that they're eating peanut butter toast. I love that they're really open about the crap that they've been through, getting shunned from their church and their kids. They honestly seem pretty well-adjusted, really good kids. You can tell that they have a pretty tight bond with their parents. There's a healthy amount of openness, and I really respect that with them. I do not think that the older son, I think his name is John, I don't think his hesitance to talk to his dad about, I don't want to say he is afraid of it. He's apprehensive. I don't think it's a big deal. John is a kid. He's a middle school aged kid who's going to feel weird about his parents dating and adding anything else to his family besides a pet dog. Even saying, hey, mom's pregnant at that age would creep most kids out because they're thinking, ew, my parents are having sex and that's how this baby came into the picture. And I just don't think it says anything bad about the relationship that the McGee kids have with their parents. And let's be real, John does have a good point. If they were asking him, are you okay with it? Even if he were to say, no, I don't want to do this, are they really going to not do it? Is it going to change anything, be any different? I don't know about that. This is really the only case where I really think adding wives is really not a great idea. I hesitate myself to say that because, hey, whatever you want to do in your family, in your bedroom, I don't really care. Love is love, all that good stuff. However, once your family is used to a certain dynamic, I can see why it would be very frustrating, confusing, possibly traumatic, at the very least upsetting to kids who have such a massive drastic change to the core structure of their family and their lives. Does that make any sense? I like John. I think he's a good kid. I just think in some case this could feel like the death of their current family and not wanting to start a new family all over again with a new person. Let's just move right on into the Aldridges because I can't wait to talk about the Winders last. I gotta tell you, I forgot what a gem Charisse is. It's taken me 2 seasons to finally figure out who Charisse reminds me of. Now, we all remember the classic movie 16 Candles. Well, I want you to think hard, and I want you to think of the character Marlene. I think they called her Lumberjack in the movie. She's the kind of awkward, tall chick that, well, here, I know you're going to remember when I say this. Long Duck Dong hooked up with her, and he's hugging her at the end of the movie, and his head is in her boobs. Please, dear God, tell me that you know who I'm talking about, because I can't get it out of my head. That is Charisse to me. Now, Vanessa, if you remember, she's the pioneer woman. And the new chick, here's the vibe I'm getting. Haven't totally fleshed it out. She's got a dash of Tanya Harding, but I also think it's someone else, but also maybe a Kendra Wilkinson kind of thing. Maybe that's just a Kendra mixed with Tanya. We've yet to meet her yet. But this week, we're headed to Niagara Falls in yet another Love After Lockup, Seeking Sister Wife, Sister Wives crossover. Thank you, universe. Thank you, goddess, as Clint would say. Now we find out that they get their own hotel rooms, which really surprised me. At first, I thought Jeff might be a little penny pincher, but I think after so many years in polygamy, remember, he actually had another wife and a whole set of kids that they left the family. He knows his way around polygamy. He's going to keep it cool. He doesn't want another breakup. So this isn't the Snowdens who are already wanting to move Vanessa into Alice, the housekeeper's suite in their basement. What the hell was that bathroom, by the way, where Vanessa was getting ready? There was a washer and dryer in the background, and she had like a 4-inch tile area to do her makeup, but she still looked phenomenal. I like Vanessa with the nude lip. Okay, I'm jumping back to the wrong family. Anyway, the Aldridges, don't get too much of them. We just leave off while they're waiting for a new wife. They're having a picnic, and I gotta say, I think that is the worst first date ever. Who wants to walk up feeling like a giant as the people waiting for you are down at Lilliputian levels? You're squatting down, prime fat thigh, flatten out square footage, and then sitting directly next to that person or your family of three on a 5x7 blanket. It's so natural, right? Okay, now let's get to the Winders. Holy fucking cringe-worthy TV at its best. It's their daughter Sadie's third birthday, and Colton thinks it's the perfect opportunity for them to make this their coming out weird polygamous day. Just the four of them out in a public, crowded place. It's got to be a crowded place, and they cannot have their other family with them. They just want to feel the wind through their long brown hair and let Colton's adenoids get some fresh air.
So, I think things are getting pretty serious. Sadie's party will be just the thing our family needs.
Yeah, that and your balls to drop so your 3-year-old's voice isn't lower than yours, Colton. You guys, Colton is Kip from Napoleon Dynamite. I don't know how I didn't see it last week, but I've seen it, and I'm sure a lot of you have too. Once you hear that voice in your head and you put the two together, you're never going to look at him the same way. I just kept picturing him in Rex Kwando, and it just made Seeking Sister Wife a lot better to watch, especially when they got to that sad, sad park scene. It's finally the big day with the saddest happy birthday banner, a whole watermelon, not sliced up yet, and a massive steaming Gatorade jug thing. What the fuck was that? I didn't know if they had cooked up some hot chocolate or if they had dry ice in there or something. It was fucking bizarre. If it was just supposed to be the four of them, are you really consuming that much fluid? Or did they bring a whole watermelon and whatever the hell was in that Gatorade jug for the whole park to share as their coming out gift? It was terrible. Their whole point in going to this park was to be around a ton of people, and it was empty. I don't even think in my entire life I have seen a park that empty. But I didn't feel bad for those three parents. I felt bad for that little girl. This was supposed to be her, third birthday party. It's just so sad. They weren't even playing with her. She's going down the slide all on her own. And the thing about it that killed me was that the three of them are just standing there whining about their goal of being seen was failed. Well, hey, assholes, why don't you drive down to another park or another grocery store or something like that? Let's just say it was for production, like they couldn't get a permit to film or something, and that's why they had to stay at that park. Why could they not have followed them to a grocery store or to a local, I don't know, whatever the hell, Kohl's, a Hallmark, wherever the fuck they go in Utah, who cares? Go walk around inside somewhere, then come back out, tell the camera crew how it went down. That is the very least of what you could have done, but no. They go home and they're like, oh, we should have known no one was going to be at the park because it's Sunday morning and church service is going on. I mean, what the fuck? Even I know that. Anyone can tell you Sunday morning at a park is not going to be a hot and bustling place to be. So, I don't know, call me an apostate or whatever, but I do not feel badly for Kip and the girls. Now, after a very quick break, we are going to get into some Sister Wives, and trust me, you're going to want to stick around because I have got some major deep dive discoveries on Mary and that motherfucking Parowan house. Stick around. Trust me, this is good. I don't know about you, but for me, it's one of those weeks when no matter what I find in my pantry or fridge, nothing looks good and I'm tired of the same stuff I've been making lately. Sound familiar? That's why I subscribe to Green Chef. After I tried my first box a couple months ago, Dave and I became hooked. Green Chef is a USDA certified organic company that makes eating well easy and affordable with plans to fit every kind of lifestyle. Meal plans include paleo, vegan, vegetarian, pescatarian, for the Snowdens, Mediterranean, heart smart, lean and clean, gluten-free, and our favorite, omnivore. Dave is not typically the chef in our house, but he saw the easy recipe card with a big photo and step-by-step instructions, and he decided that he was going to get to it. He made pesto pork patties with fresh snow peas and mashed potatoes this weekend. It was really, really good. My daughter helped him in the kitchen, and I guess by helping, I mean she used the pre-measured, mostly prepped ingredients to stir and season. I love the fresh ingredients that are delivered right to my door, ingredients that are not typically in season at my local grocery store here in the Midwest. But here they are showing up, high quality, clean ingredients, ready to go, and they taste so good. I've said this before, but the variety of flavors and cuisines are my favorite perk of Green Chef. We can go from having pita pizzas one night, pork patties the other, and then chicken pho the next. I really want you to try it out. You have nothing to lose. Eat healthy food that tastes incredible, and you can modify your subscription at any time. For $50 off your first box, go to greenchef.us/realitv. That's R-E-A-L-I-T-V. One more time to save $50 off your first box, greenchef.us/realitv. Sister Wife Secrets. That's the name of this week's Sister Wives episode. And let me tell you, I have a secret that a sister wife is keeping. So get ready for it. But first, let's talk about the family's day at Floydlam Park. Okay, Cody, nice try to transition into talking about how you need room to spread out, wink, wink, because you want to move to a different state, not just picnic blankets. Very subtle, very subtle. Not so subtle is Cody's hairline that is also spreading out towards the north. I don't know if it's because it's receding or because Cody is pulling so damn hard on his hair, committing to this severe high and tight ponytail. I hate the high ponytail. If a man has to do a ponytail, okay, if that's their look that they're committing to, please don't make it look like you are just pulling it up, heading to JV women's volleyball. I mean, for Christ's sake, pull it low, keep it, oh God, I don't even know. I just want him to buzz it all off. Buzz it off, buzz it down. Remember his brother, RIP, who obviously passed away, hence the RIP? He had his hair short and he looked a lot better than Cody does. We'll just leave it at that. He even chooses strange times to wear his ponytail. It really got me because they're having this picnic at a park where It's Vegas. It is hot. They're trying to find shade because it's Vegas and it's hot. But Cody has got on a long sleeve shirt and his hair is down. The first thing that happens when I start to sweat is that my hair goes up, and then I try to get some ventilation between my boobs because that's the secret. But not Cody. All he needs is acres of duck and peacock poop, which he calls pacop pop pop, and the risk of salmonella to make him happy. Just about the time Mariah and her girlfriend Audrey arrived to represent the LGBTQ community that sells LuLaRoe, Mary walks up with her newest crush. Oh, God, I'm sorry. I meant her special friend, Christy, who is also, word of the day, catfished. They walk into the family picnic giggling, as happy as could be, quite the opposite of how Mary is with anyone else in this family. And remember, Mary is hot off the heels of that family meeting where they told her, oh, sorry, we can't just spot you a cool $40K for your latest wet bar project in Parowan. So, you know, Mary is not on the best of terms with everyone. It's been a while since we've seen Robin's kids. Probably same goes for Mary. So it came as no shock that Prince Solomon himself points and asks, who's she? Well, first of all, rude. And second, she's your fourth mommy, the one who used your birth as a storyline for her pretend search for a surrogate. So at this point, I did start to wonder what they were going to eat at this picnic because I didn't spy the usual sister wives, veggies stuck in cups with ranch dressing or Mexican hot chocolate in crock pots, but I was not expecting Buffalo Wild Wings. I mean, I love some B-dubs, but I don't know if I would want my flaming wings or spicy garlic in the middle of a hot Vegas park filled with animal feces and Mary's eyebrows. I mean, no one has got a stomach for that. But what I do want is more Christine body slamming Mary down. Moment of silence. I mean, Christine took her down. She had her in a headlock, flipped her over in 2.2 seconds. All that wrestling practice that Christine has been watching Cody do for years with his bros, with Cody's special friends, it really paid off. And years of built-up rage over that wet bar came out in that last flip over TKO, tackle heard round the cul-de-sac. It was nothing short of magnificent. Now, Gwendolyn, well, she takes after Christine because she kind of did the same thing to Mary when she came and sat in Mary's lap. I think Gwendolyn is just kind of a kooky kid. I'm not going to bag on her just yet because we're all awkward at that age. But I think Mary was the most awkward in that situation. I had my eye on her, as we all do. And it really becomes apparent that Mary turns it on when she has a new friend around. Have you noticed that? She used to do the same thing with Robin when Robin first came around. The best example of this that I can remember off the top of my head was, remember when Robin and Mary had this fudge cook-off, fudge bake-off thing, and they came up with this hilarious prank that they were going to go to the little boutique and buy the fudge instead? Mary was downright fucking giddy. So she pulls this prankster act, like she's easy breezy, such a laid-back jokester. You know, you see what I got to put up with my sister wives here? They're so uptight. Just what I told you about. No, Mary is just as horrible of a liar as her catfisher is. I do not fall for it at all. And now let's talk about Gwendolyn's tackle heard around the world, just as Christine did the same thing. Gwendolyn is playing this frisbee game with all of them, and she jumps on Isabel. I mean, Jesus fucking Christ. Forget about the PVC with the weights contraption thing. All you got to do is call Goop's name and she's going to jump in and do it for you. I took a screenshot of it. I couldn't believe my eyes. I'm sure Isabel's doctor is rolling over in his whatever machine, x-ray. I was going to say MRI, but well, apparently I'm not running the scoliosis boot camp. Now, okay, so I don't even know what the whole point of this picnic is other than to have Mary's friend there to play anthropologist intern again and get this random person's approval of the family. I get why Mary wanted her there, because Mary needs someone to back up her narrative that she's this victim. But Mariah is not stupid, even though she let a bear claw through her jeans. She's not going to let Mary control how she feels. Mary wants Mariah to just completely change her mind and start pitying Mary and swoop in and say, "Oh my gosh, Mom, I'm so sorry. I didn't realize what you were going through. I feel bad." And this is something I hate. I bring this up every time parents do this, no matter what the show. Parents, you gotta stop doing this shit. It is not your kid's job to make you feel better about yourself, even if they are a grown child, if they're over 18. If Mariah doesn't want to talk about you and your catfisher, then don't fucking talk about it. No kid or adult wants to talk about their mom's love life or who she wanted to love while she was trying to cheat on your dad. And that is exactly what Mary did. Let's just call it what it is. I'm completely with Mariah here. Why would she feel badly for Mary when Mary was the one choosing to talk with this guy, or who she thought was a guy? She was making plans to move out and find love again. Mary even did that on camera. They were eating dinner that one night, and she was like, "Don't come and look for me if I happen to disappear sometime." She's so full of shit. Now, what I did not like during that sit-down therapy session between the four of them was Audrey butting in playing therapist. I don't know why Audrey bugs me, or why it bugged me that Audrey and Mariah made this plan for Audrey to take charge of the conversation, but it did. It rubbed me the wrong way. I don't know. I just feel like it's maybe not Audrey's place to jump in when it's a family thing like this. Maybe it's just me. It's not like Mary or Christy even listened when Audrey was like, "Okay, I think it's just better we all move on, not talk about it. If it's a non-issue, let's just not talk about it." That Christine just... she was committed to laying out her sob story. And then fucking Mary, Jesus, making your kid sit through a stranger. Christy is a stranger to Mariah. She's interrogating her about her feelings. How do you feel? Why do you feel that way? Why are you making your mom feel that way? It was completely inappropriate. Just a shitty, shitty mom move. Thank God my mom doesn't know really how to use the internet and still thinks that her cordless phone works like a cell phone, because I don't know what I would do if she knew how to get on Match.com or these blogs and all this kind of stuff. Okay, let's jump to Mary announcing that she doesn't need the $40,000 anymore. We're getting closer. We're getting hotter. I've been waiting to see what Mary was going to say, because I did a very simple Google search, just took a little deep diving. You could probably find these same documents yourself. I found out exactly how Mary purchased that Parowan home. She said she got her lender to allow her to do a smaller down payment. So, oh, there, that's all it took. Na-na-na-boo-boo. I didn't need any of you guys to help here. I'm the first to admit I am no mortgage expert here, but I'm just going to relay the information that I found in the very papers she signed her name on October 16th and 17th, 2017. I'm going to break it down here in the best way I know how without reading the entire document, which would put all of us to sleep. Basically, in Mary's loan documents, she got something called a second rider. And the supplemental documentation that goes along with that second rider when you are purchasing the property, getting your loan, the second rider describes how the Parowan house is a second home. It is not an income property. It's two different things. Per the rules of the loan, the property cannot be used as a rental property. It cannot be managed by someone else. It can only be occupied by the borrower. If you want to get specific here, here is the exact wording from her documents. Borrower shall occupy and shall only use the property as borrower's second home. Borrower shall keep the property available for borrower's exclusive use and enjoyment at all times, and shall not subject the property to any timesharing or other shared ownership arrangement, or to any rental pool or agreement that requires borrower either to rent the property or give a management firm or any other person any control over the occupancy or use of the property. I also have some information that shows Mary did indeed take a larger loan amount for just over $40,000 more than she originally was going to. I don't know this for a fact because I don't know what her original documentation, her original loan that she was going to take, but I would wonder if she was going to buy it as an investment property, because if she did it as an investment property, she would have to have a larger down payment. I'm wondering if this cousin who worked miracles for her said, hey, the only way you can buy this house is if you purchase it as a second home, not an income property, investment property, and then you can put down less money, but you can't use it as a rental property. But guess what? She is. Not only is she saying her mom is going to live there, she said, I'm going to hire people to help run the place. So here's my take on it. I think Mary knew what kind of loan she got. She knows what she signed. And if she doesn't, then she pulled a Teresa Giudice and, oh, I didn't know what I signed. Well, you should have. You put your name on it. You read your stuff. I think she's pretending like she's going to use the home as an income property, which is, again, not allowed per her loan that she signed. But she's going to say, oh, oopsie, Cody, I guess I have to live there now. In my opinion, either Mary knows this and this is her plan, or she didn't disclose this to her lender and she's just saying, fuck it, to Stearns Lending and Fannie Mae and whoever the hell else. I don't know how Christine and Janelle and Robin can stay calm and word things so carefully around Mary when they know she's a liar. Let's jump into another lie she told, lying by omission, when she told them that she didn't close on the house and that she had already moved in. I think that is absolute bullshit. Let's just take a break here for a second and imagine. Let's say Janelle bought a house, closed on it, and didn't tell Mary. You don't think Mary would lose her goddamn mind? Maddie's cervix closed after giving birth and Mary was all pissed off that she wasn't made aware of it. She is such a fucking brat. There's no way she can spin this thing into her wanting to tell everyone, but it just was a spontaneous closing. They called me and I had to run over and sign it. That was one of the worst lies I think she's told, by the way, because we're not idiots. She started saying she didn't have time to tell everyone because she got this call from the lender on Monday morning and they said she had to get there and sign and then she had to pack her mom up and unpack her, you know, leading us all to believe this was an emergency closing. She had to do it the same day, pack up, move, unpack the same day. No, no. Then she continues her story and says, I had to do all that within 72 hours. Okay, bitch. So you basically had the whole week to pick up your cell phone, call your family, and then tell them while you're on vacation that weekend. She's such a spoiled fucking bitch. And that's the whole story. That's it. That's all she wrote. She just can't keep going on saying she's pissed off that no one wants her to have the house. And then when they are excited for you and they want to help, then you say, oh, well, you weren't excited before, so that's why I didn't tell you now. It's exactly what Mariah said. It's exactly what all of us are saying. Mary's got to make herself the victim at all times. And you know who I think actually has the most reason to be pissed? I started thinking about this late last night. I think Janelle has every freaking right to be livid. Think about this. When Mary was saying back at her house when she originally said, I was able to get the loan, I can get the house, I don't need to borrow the $40,000 from the family, Mary kept saying, I earned this money by myself. This is my thing. You know, I'm not sharing it. I did it. I earned the money. Well, if I remember correctly, wasn't Janelle working full time for most of the years the kids were growing up? She also made a lot of money by herself, but she put it back into the family. She invested it into Christine and Mary and all their kids. And now you look at Mary, she's done the same thing, but she's just screaming, mine, mine, mine. This is all mine. It's not only that. Let's go back to this victimhood thing for just a minute to wrap up the episode. Mary was just saying last week how the only thing everyone talks about is the house, and she doesn't know why they keep talking about the house. She gets it. And then this week, she's talking to Robin, and she says to Robin, she didn't tell anyone about how she closed because no one asks her about it. They don't care about it. Bullshit. Just say, I didn't tell you because I kind of wanted to stick it to you. It wasn't the mature thing to do. It wasn't the right thing to do. Just fess up to it. Be done with it, period. But you know what did change Mary's tune? The only thing that really cheered her up? Oh, asking for help moving. Then she was all happy to be joking around with them. And oh, you go grab that heavy table upstairs. Come on, Solomon, get that table thing. I mean, God, she is so transparent. As soon as she needs something, then she's all happy-go-lucky again. We're all good. Can't wait to show you the house. Guys, I cannot freaking stand her. Okay, so tell me what you think about this mortgage information. There is a difference between an investment property and a second home. I know some realtors and some mortgage people out there, you're probably going to have some more input and some lingo and jargon and loopholes. So let's hear it. Is this a legit thing or is this going to be another my sister wife's closet? Allegedly, but it's doing great. Get yourselves your charm bracelets. Maybe you can send me one because you know where to find me. I am at RealityVPod on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Remember to check out Patreon, patreon.com/RealityVPod. Coming up this week, we have a Teen Mom recap with my buddy Amanda. I am also talking with Melissa from Moms and Murder. We're going to talk Sherry Papini. Remember that case? What else do I have coming up? Oh, Amanda and I also have a new podcast on Patreon. That's patreon.com/AmandaAndJody. We are recapping Kitchen Nightmares, Amy's Baking Company this week. And next week, the classic Flavor of Love episode where someone tries to cook a chicken in a microwave. Check that out. $4 a month. You get to tell us what episodes we're watching, what we're talking about. You even get to name the podcast. So head on over to both of those. Remember to check out Moms on the Rocks. And stay warm, stay safe, and until next week, stay salty.
Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT.